I welcome you to another week, the 46th, of our verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. We have transitioned now out of the five books of Moses into the historical books of the Old Testament, the first of which is the book of Joshua. So if you will open to Joshua chapter number 2 today, we're going to go back just a few verses to verse number 8, and take up our story right there. We've got two spies that have been sent across the Jordan by the commander of the Israeli forces. That would be Joshua. He is trying to determine the lay of the land around the big city that is across the river from him inside the Promised Land, the very first fortified position that he will have to deal with once he crosses. It's right around the second week of the first Jewish month, and Moses has been dead for a little over a month now, and it is the 41st year of the Exodus. So the two spies have gone into the city of Jericho, which is on a trade route, so it's used to having strangers pass through the town. But this town of Jericho is a little bit on the nervous side. Actually, we should say it's a lot on the nervous side, because they've had to watch for the last several months during the hours of darkness that glow of God's presence about 10 or 12 miles away to the east, where the Israeli encampment is. Now, that is highly unusual in this time of the ancient Middle East, when the brightest objects at night were the stars and the moon in the sky and the campfire or the torches that were near you. When they saw something like this glowing column of fire with kind of a canopy off there in the distance, that would have been quite frightening. They've also been hearing stories about this group that's encamped over there, about how they are former slaves from Egypt that left when their God brought all sorts of plagues on the Egyptians, and how they crossed the Red Sea there at the Gulf of Suez, and how they have been kind of working their way across the peninsula of the Sinai and down through the Midianite region between Midian and Edom. And now here they are on the border of Canaan, just across the river from them. And they've taken over the entire eastern side of the Jordan Valley by their God giving them military victories. So you can see that the Jericho people would be more nervous about strangers in their country right now and in their city. So it is reported about them being in the house of Rahab. Now, Josephus, the Jewish historian from the first century of the Christian era, is the one that tells us that she was the innkeeper in the city of Jericho. But the scripture tells us that she was a sexually loose woman. I know our versions tend to have harlot there, which is a sex worker, but the word can also just simply mean someone of loose moral character. But this woman is the one that the spies have developed some sort of attachment or relationship to. And she decides to protect them from the authorities of her own city. And she's done this by hiding them under the flax that is drying on the top of her inn, and by telling the authorities that came to her inn, oh yeah, there were some guys here, but they left before the gates were closed at sunset. If you're quick, you can probably catch them. And so the pursuers take off, heading for the Jordan River, which is about 6 miles away, hoping to catch them before they cross back to the Israeli side on the east. So that's where we were when we closed up on Friday. So verse number 8 of Joshua 2 says, before the men lay down, so before they got underneath the flax and stayed there quietly until the coast was clear, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, I know that Yahweh, because somehow the name of God is being talked about in all these stories for the past 40 years, and she knows the name. We've been translating it out literally, he who is. So she says, though, I know that Yahweh, he who is, has given you the land. So she already figures Canaan is done. It is forfeit to the Israelis. And that the fear of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. I shared with you last time, I believe that is not just simply talking about the emotional state of the people, but the fact that a lot of the people are evacuating out of the city of Jericho and perhaps some of the other cities that they're concerned the Israelis will be coming against quickly. This happens a lot in areas where war seems to be coming, is that many of the women and children, older people, people who are just simply afraid, they leave the border zones and go somewhere else as refugees. So that melting away is probably a description of that refugee flow away from the Israeli area that is going to be happening once they cross at Jericho. And we have heard how he who is dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt. That was 40 years ago. And what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction. That was less than a year ago. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you. For he who is your God, he is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. Now that line, I believe, demonstrates her infantile faith, her baby faith in the true and living God. And this is the beginning of her conversion experience when she acknowledges that he who is the only God, the true God. Verse 12, now then, please swear to me by Yahweh, swear to me by the name of this God. As I have dealt kindly with you, you also will deal kindly with my father's house, and give me a sure sign, and that you will save alive my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death. Now let's talk a little bit about the possible age of Rahab. I do not believe that she is an older woman. I do not even believe that she's a middle-aged woman. I think she is a fairly young woman, that her mother, that she's still living in the house of her father and mother. In fact, her father may be the one that owns the property, and She's got brothers and sisters that are right there that she's concerned about. So I believe that she is very likely in her later teens or her 20s. That's my conviction. There's another reason I believe that is because she will end up marrying Salmon, a Judah tribe member, once everything has settled down with the destruction of Jericho. So she, I do not believe, is married at this time. She is talked about in English versions as being a prostitute or a sex worker, whereas I think it just may be that she is a young Canaanite woman with loose sexual morals up to this point in her life, and that that is the Jewish assessment of what she was like at this moment in her existence. All right, so she asked them, "Swear by the name of the true God that you will save my family and me, because we're putting our trust in your God and protecting you." Verse 14, "The men said to her, 'Our life for yours, even to death. If you do not tell this business of ours, then when he who is gives us the land, we will deal kindly and faithfully with you.'" So they do make the oath in the name of the Lord, in the name of he who is the only true God, that provided they don't rat them out, hand them over to the authorities, or provide any type of mechanism, information to get them caught, that they will protect her. And so that is a binding promise. Now, the question needs to immediately be asked, why are these spies, these two men, allowing an exception to the rule that all Canaanites who do not leave the country are going to be executed? And the only answer that I can give to you is my conviction that conversion to the true faith of the one living God allowed these two men to feel that they were not making an exception to the rule, that this woman was no longer a Canaanite who was bound to pagan deities. And so that's how I would lay it out to you as to why they felt comfortable giving her this promise. Verse 15, "Then she let them down by a rope through the window." So this is later, probably in the wee hours of the morning. Her house is right on the wall. And maybe we should talk about archaeologically what they found for the city of Jericho. Jericho covers about 15 or so acres in a mound in the Jordan Valley. If you pull up something like Google Earth, that's what I use a lot, you can zoom in and find this ancient mound. It's called a tell, T-E-L, which is just multiple levels of occupation for a city, and it builds up over time. So this is like a little artificial plateau about 6 miles west of the River Jordan and northwest, I think, of the modern-day city of Jericho, if I remember correctly. And so this mound takes about 15, 16 acres, something in that nature, and its slope sides used to have two levels of wall on it. On the bottom level, closest to the normal ground level, there was this fairly decent retaining wall that went up, and then that wall was topped by a mud brick wall. And then there were buildings and things on a slope that was going up to the flat area on the top of this artificial plateau. And the top also had a ring of mud brick wall around it. And so we basically had the upper city on the very top of the plateau. And then we had kind of the lower city on the slopes around that first walled-in section up on the top. It would appear that the house of Rahab was down on that lower slope area, the area that probably would have been less valuable as far as property would be concerned, but also the place where maybe trade took place. And that's a good place where you would have an inn, near a gate. And so this lower wall was the backside of Rahab's house and would have had a window or two in it to allow for ventilation, but also just so you can see out. So the scripture says that she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was built into the city wall, that she lived in the wall. And she said to them, "Go into the hills, or the pursuers will encounter you, and hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Then afterward, you may go your way." So she lets them down with this reminder. Don't go down by the river. Because remember, I sent the searchers down that direction to the east. You go over to the west and hide out in the foothills that are behind Jericho and wait for 3 days till things calm down, and then surreptitiously make your way down to the crossing point and go across. Now, I find it interesting, when I was doing some research again to get ready for our class today, Answers in Genesis has a very nice, easily read article on the archaeological work at Jericho. And a couple of things they point out is, first of all, the description of the city that I just gave you, where it's kind of two levels with a couple of different walls that are used. But the other thing that it points out is that there is a small section on the north side where the walls seem to have been intact while all the other walls fell down. So based on that, they surmise, and I have to agree with them on this, that might be the section of Rahab's house, the only part of the wall that didn't collapse. And so it's on the north side. That also would match this idea that when she's letting them down, she says, okay, now head off to the left, you know, go off to the west and hide in the hills. Don't go to the right and follow the road down to the river. Now, the other thing that the article points out is that the destruction of Jericho, the burning of it, and the falling down of these walls is right around 1400 BC. And that matches perfectly what I'm talking to you about, because I place this event in the spring of 1416 BC as the destruction of Jericho taking place then. Okay, so back to our text. Verse 17, "The men said to her, 'We will be guiltless with respect to this oath of yours that you have made us swear,'" meaning we'll keep it as long as you keep your part of the bargain. Verse 18, "Behold, when we come into the land, you shall tie this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down, and you shall gather into your house your father and mother, your brothers, and all your father's household. Then if anyone goes out of the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we shall be guiltless. But if a hand is laid on anyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head." So they make the promise. everybody that is inside your house, inside the house we're coming out of right now, which we're going to mark with a red thread, a red marker. You're going to put it there. They are protected people for what will happen during the Israeli assault. Anybody that goes out of the house, they're responsible for their own death. Also, verse 20, if you tell this business of ours, then we will be guiltless with respect to your oath that you have made us swear. And so she said, according to your word, so be it. And so she sent them away, they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. So red here is very interesting because symbolically it speaks to us of blood and of redemption. So she puts the red thread or the red cord in this same escape window when she sees the Israelis start doing their marching around the city. And her whole family will hang out inside that house throughout the seven-day period of the Israeli marching. And they will be in the only section of the wall that does not collapse on the day that the trumpets are blown and God causes the walls to fall, which also tells you that God agreed with the sparing of Rahab and her family because he's the one that causes the walls to fall. And he apparently spares that specific section of the walls. Well, you know that they're supposed to hide out for 3 days. So they get out of the window and they head off to the hills for that 3 day period. And this is where we now need to pick up the story of Joshua around that same time. And I told you that we were going to start in chapter 2 and then come back to chapter 1, which we're now going to do. Joshua chapter 1, I believe, takes place on the Sabbath day. That'd be the seventh day of the first month of the 41st year of the Exodus. And it is the day on which Joshua is told by God to start making preparations to move Israel across the Jordan. And it says, Joshua chapter 1, after the death of Moses, the servant of He Who Is said to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, Moses, my servant, is dead. And by this time, he's been dead for several weeks. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, into the land that I'm giving to them, to the people of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I will have given to you, just as I promised to Moses, from the wilderness, that's down in the south, and this Lebanon, as far as the river Euphrates, so that's up to the north. And it's interesting, in this passage, it's not simply the technical promised land that goes up just a little ways north of the Sea of Galilee, but rather all the way up to that bend that is in the Euphrates River, which eventually David and Solomon will have control of. That's how far the Solomonic kingdom expanded to the north. And all the land of the Hittites to the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your territory. So basically all the way to the Med, all of this promised land plus the annexed territories, and even in this passage, the future expanded territory of Solomon and David. Verse 5, no man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you or forsake you. So these are promises made by God to Joshua. Verse 6, be strong and courageous, for you shall cause this people to inherit the land that I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, being careful to do according to all the law of that Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may be or have good success wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night. Now, let me throw something at you here, just to chew on. You may remember in the book of Deuteronomy that Moses had said, when you have a king eventually, I want your king to write down all the words of the law in a book to be checked on by the Levites, the priests, to make sure it's accurate. And then that king needs to have this law with him and read from it every single day of his life. So that's the future instruction from Moses to the kings of Israel. I wonder whether or not Moses gave this instruction to Joshua for himself, and that Joshua had to sit down and write out all five books of Moses as we know them, the first five books of the Old Testament, and that he is supposed to keep it with him and meditate it on them day after day, because that would go very well with what we just read in verse 8. This book of the law, this scroll that you have, shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that it is written in it. So that Joshua is a man of the book. For then you will make your way prosperous. Then you will have good success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened. Do not be dismayed. For he who is your God is with you wherever you go. So God is challenging Joshua to be the man that he can be, to be the righteous leader that God knows he can be, a man who is of the book. And there's going to be frightened aspects of his life now, because he doesn't have Moses for the first time in decades. He has to be the leader. And that is a terrifying situation for those taking up such leadership positions. Well, we're out of time, so let's mark our place and get back into the Word tomorrow.